From awaytogarden.com and robinhoodradio.com, this is Away to Garden with Margaret Roach, your weekly invitation to dig in and grow.
Today's guest returned from a 1979 trip visiting English gardens, inspired to do some garden making of his own. His canvas was a northwestern Connecticut hillside and not the Cotswolds, and the home he'd just purchased wasn't a grand manor house, but a simple 18th century farmhouse. Nevertheless, George Shalkoff brought the feel of an English garden to life at the place that became Hollister House, which today is a much-visited destination garden and also the site of a rich offering of educational programs throughout the season, including the popular Garden Study Weekend early each September. More in a moment, but first, these messages.
Underwriting support for Away to Garden provided by Color Blends Wholesale Flower Bulbs, a third-generation bulb company offering top-size flower bulbs directly to landscape professionals and ambitious residential gardeners on the web, colorblends.com. And by High Mowing Seeds, Wolcott, Vermont, professional quality vegetable, flower, and herbal seeds that are 100% organic and non-GMO project verified. On the web, highmowingseeds.com. And by White Flower Farm, offering a wide range of carefully selected and expertly grown garden plants. On the web, whiteflowerfarm.com.
In the gardens at Hollister House in Washington, Connecticut, George Shalkoff has contrasted the formal and informal, made room-like spaces to explore, and experimented with a wide-ranging palette of plants over the years. He'll be talking about the making of Hollister House on Saturday, September 6th, at the annual Garden Study Weekend there, along with several other noted speakers on a diversity of topics, and I'm so glad to welcome him to the program today. Thanks for making time to join me, George.
Well, thanks for having me on your show. It's a pleasure.
Yes. So I'll give all the information and links and so forth about the September 6th event and your other offerings all season with a transcript of the show over on awaytogarden.com. But you're going to be joined by some other noted speakers as well, as I said in the introduction. Yes?
Yes. We've got Kathy and Schmidt coming all the way from Germany.
Yes.
And we've got Bill Kalina, who used to be the director of the Maine Botanical Garden. And we've got Joanne Vieira, who's going to be speaking about the trustees of reservations who have that exquisite garden up in Massachusetts, Naumkeag.
Yes, yes. And so it's going to be a real diversity of topics from the ecological to, I think, native shrubs and trees to use in our gardens to, as you say, some of these historic sort of grand estates that have become enduring gardens that Joanne's going to be speaking about. So I'll give all the info about that over on the website with the transcript. So as a visitor to Hollister House, as I've been a number of times over the years, you know, I've always been especially struck by the contrasts, you know, the feeling, the enclosed and sort of safe, cozy feeling you've created on this very open rural Connecticut hillside, you know, these distinct, formally defined gardens within the garden, these sort of rooms. And I wanted to start there. I mean, that was, I presume, one of the big inspirations from that English trip, yes?
It was indeed, and you used the word cozy, which is very apt, because it's a formal garden. The English gardens that inspired me, like Sissinghurst and Great Dixter, formal gardens, but they're not formal in terms of Versailles, of rigidity. It's a formality which is formal in terms of an architectural format. And
right,
that's what I tried to do here. I didn't want it to be to the garden to overwhelm the house. It's an 18th century with 19th century additions, New England farmhouse, and the garden should be in scale with that. The garden is too big for the house, but I think the way we have organized it, that you don't feel that.
All of our gardens are too big for our houses, George.
My friend Betsy up the road years ago, I think she meant this as a compliment. I always took it as a compliment. But she remarked that this garden is a permanent battle between order and chaos. And I like that. I think it's a good way to put it. The architectural format, the right angle plans, the distinct rooms, they allow us to have a style of planting which is looser and more naturalistic. than we could do if we did not have the framework. It's like a landscape picture from the 19th century. It's got the gold frame that holds it all together.
Right.
Our hedges and our walls are very important in defining the structure of the garden, and then the plants can romp and have a good time, sort of attacking this, overwhelming the structure. And it seems to work. People seem to like it. Not
Well,
every.
and it's different because again, in this area, in this rural area where you are, and I'm not so far away. It's unexpected, you know. It's not, you know, these to be in these almost feeling these enclosed rooms, like what you said, with the walls, the hedges, etc., and to be inside each kind of garden picture, and then you can move to the next space and explore something else entirely. And
Yes, the different rooms
yeah.
allow us to have different color schemes from here to there. There's a yellow border, there's a red border. Color is very important to me, but basically most of my color decisions are just about what works, and I worry about what doesn't. And of course that's we're venturing now into personal taste.
Yes.
It's fingernails on the blackboard for me. If I see taxicab yellow combined with magenta, I just hate that. And yet, somebody else's garden, if I visited, I've gotten mature enough in my old age that I can appreciate someone else's taste. If someone is visual and sees things very differently than I do, I like that. I can enjoy somebody's vision if it's different than my own. But my own vision, I like harmonious colors that feed off each other and contrast. Very important, the color in the garden. I don't just depend on flowers, because in the north here, we're lucky if something stays in bloom for 2 weeks. Very few flowers,
Right.
unless they're annuals, go through the whole season. So I've used foliage for color. Variegated plants are very important to me. Variegated trees. My favorite is Cornus controversa, variegata, the variegated version of an Asian dogwood. It's got pale cream variegated leaves. It's like a flowering tree the whole season. The other color that's very important in the orchestration of the contrast in the garden are purple foliage, and
Right.
Japanese maples are good. Other purple, there barberries. I like barberries a lot. I know that at this point there's a campaign to outlaw barberries in certain states, which is really a shame. The one that grows in the woods is a definite menace, no question about it. But I've,
Thunbergii, the one, the
yeah,
Berberis thunbergii.
no question about it. But I've had a purple-leaved one growing in the same spot for 35 years, and it's never seeded itself. It's utterly harmless and does nice things in my garden. So that's
Yeah.
one of the purple leaves that's very important in the way I plan the rhythms of the colors, how you you balance out colors.
Right. The invasion ecologists would say, you know, the biologists who specialize in invasive plants, they would say, you don't see it because the birds took the fruit and flew a mile away and pooped and planted the invasive barberries in the woods a mile away. That's what they would say. But I'm just put saying that for the record. I get what you mean. And there's
Yes,
so
I've heard them
many.
say that, but I've never seen one a mile away.
Right. No, I understand. But what's so great, what the point you're making is that colorful foliage, including from our woody plants, so not just to rely on flowers, is critically important to making a garden that really hangs together in a longer season than just that 2 week period of something blooming.
Yes,
Yes.
we need to keep the interest going. The other color that I use a lot is chartreuse foliage, yellow foliage.
Yes.
And one of my favorites, and it does seed itself all over the place, but it doesn't seed itself out in the landscape, is Spirea japonica. I've got a nice yellow leaf version with pale pink flowers, forget its name. I have at least 50 plants, 49 of which are seedlings from the mother plant.
Right.
And we like it, and we allow it to pop up here and there. This garden is very much about self-seeded plants. And of course, that there's a distinction between plants that are dangerous and self-seed into the landscape, and those are which are just invasive in your garden. And we have a lot of those, and they're useful because this is a big garden. They don't cost any money. And there's something about the way nature self-seeds around, which is I can't do it myself. There's an energy about the way nature does it
A
that
spontaneity. It has a
is wonderful in a
spontaneity.
garden, and it's the only way I know to get it.
So color-wise, you were talking about colors, and are there sort of any color palettes? So you were talking about chartreuse and, colorful foliage and variegation and so forth. Are there any, and you have some borders that are dominated by a particular color, a red border, et cetera. Are there color combinations that that are very George, any combinations that are particularly sort of signature to you at all?
Silver foliage and white flowers, I love. We have what we call the gray garden. It's one of the gardens here. Really a white garden, but I allow some blue flowers in it occasionally, and so easier to call it a gray garden. And we have silver foliage, various artemisias, and there's a wonderful silver-leaved tree that towers above the garden called Salix alba Sericea, if I'm pronouncing it probably might be Sericea. It's a wonderful, more silver version of the white willow. It's a very good accent plant for that color.
So the silver with white and maybe a little blue thrown
And
in.
a little blue, yes.
It's so
Blue
cooling
is a
and
wonderful color, but hard to get blue in the garden after spring. We have forget-me-nots, they're true blue. Virginia bluebells, and then the blues turn kind of what we call campanula blue. It's almost blue, but with more red in the color than true blue. And they're good too, but delphiniums, of course, are wonderful. Hard to grow here. They don't like to return.
I one other thing that I think of about Hollister House is that you use water. You have some natural water, a stream I think that comes along the part of the property, but you use water, as I saw when I visited English Gardens years ago and was very impressed by the use of water juxtaposed against the plants and as an element of the of garden design. You have various water elements in some of those gardens, and I think that's a very striking part of designing a garden, is to include water into the
I would
design.
agree with you on that. We're very blessed here because we are at the junction of two natural little brooks. There's Sprain Brook, and the other one is so short and small it doesn't have a name. But we've used we take we use the water. There's a pond dammed up before I got here. They don't let you do that anymore, but it's grandfathered in, and we take water from that. We've got a rill where we pump the water into it. It's moving constantly. And then we have a reflecting pool with a little fountain, which is entirely by gravity. It's piped from a little stream above it, and it runs all the time. It's icy cold, so it's a great place to swim on a very hot day. But yes, I think water is terribly important. There's a certain magic about running water. It just, it's wonderful to hear the sound. It's wonderful to see it. Makes a garden, makes a place special.
Definitely brings in the birds too. That seems to me to be, a lot of the creatures also appreciate it, not just the human visitors, but the
Frogs. The frogs spawn in our reflecting pool. Cold is the water. They don't seem to matter that the water's cold. And they're the biggest attraction for children.
Now, plant wise, I may be recalling incorrectly, but you do like daylilies, for instance. That's one plant that I think that you Kind of have an impact, add a lot of color to the garden. Yes, in their season, I mean.
Well, they're very important for the summer.
Yes.
Spring is full of really spectacular flowers like peonies that are showstoppers. By midsummer, they're flowers, but they're not too many big, important, impressive blossoms. Daylilies can give you that. I have lots of different varieties. I prefer basically the ones that are more like the wild species, more delicate, that still look like a lily. I have said critically that daylily breeders at one point seemed to want to make the daylily more like a pansy than a true lily. And those varieties are not, and I suppose they could be wonderful in another place. We try to make our plantings look more or less natural. I always say that I want it to look as if it was the plant's idea to grow there and not mine. Often that's true if they sell seed, but we try to give a look which is a natural sort of it's not, we don't want it to look self-conscious. We want it to
Again, I
be.
think there's a spontaneity to the plantings within each of the spaces in at Hollister House. There's
Thank
a
you.
sense
Yes,
of
that's a very
spontaneity.
good word.
And I don't and I know that spontaneity to achieve it took a lot of work. I mean, it's not that you just let it all hang out and let the weeds take over and whatever. I don't mean to say
Well,
it
sometimes we do, but
yeah.
then of course you have to wade in. I always say that you have to be judge and jury in a naturalistic garden. You have to protect the innocent, punish the guilty. I want it to look as if it's one big, happy horticultural family. That's the illusion we're after. Sometimes it is. Sometimes we have to protect plants. The plants are always trying to kill other plants, take over. And as I say, you have to protect the innocent from the marauders. But we want it to look as if it's everybody's happy and if there's balance. That's the appearance that we're after.
Has it been a good rose season? You like old roses too, yes? I mean, that's
Don't
another.
have too many old roses.
Oh, not, no, I can.
And
Why did I
the
think that?
hybrid teas and the floribundas were just a little bit too cold for them to prosper. I have a few old roses that I like. One of which, it's not a 19th century, the 1920s, is called Clair Matin. A French rose means clear morning in French. It's a good pink rose. It's a rebloomer. Most of the rugoses are good. There's a particularly nice deep red rugosa called a hybrid, the Grootendorst hybrid called Grootendorst Supreme, which is one of my favorites.
I don't know that one. Yeah, I've been besieged by the what is the name of the rose rosette disease that's brought in from it's been coming in from, all the invasive multiflora rose around the woodlands and
Oh,
so forth
yes,
here,
no.
and it's being transferred. So I've had to get rid of some of my remaining roses, but it's that's always frustrating because they provide so much color at that sort of transition season into summer, the beginning, the late spring and into summertime, typically.
And then, of course, roses are intrinsically romantic. There's just something about a rose which reaches the psyche like no other flower. They're magic roses, or can be.
And this, how big is Hollis? How big is the property's, what, about 25 acres or something?
Property is around 25 acres. I should measure it sometime and figure out how big the garden is. People ask, I don't think that way. I don't know how big the garden is. It appears probably bigger than it is because when you divide space, you make it seem larger. And we have all.
And you're on a hillside, and that's another thing. I mean, I'm on a hillside also. And at first, when I came here years ago, and it was like, ooh, well, wait a minute, this is more complicated. How do you make gardens on this uneven terrain and on these different levels and so forth? Now, so that was another challenge that you faced.
It was indeed because I don't mind being on a slope if I'm going from here to there. But once I get there, I want it to be flat. I want it to be the level ground. And
Right.
when I bought the house 45 years ago, the only flat space on the whole property was the driveway. And of course, they had a garden there. So we got in the bulldozers and we got in the wall builders and we terraced the garden, which is
Right.
terrifying when you do it because there's no living thing that's left after the bulldozer comes through. You've killed everything. It also provides a great deal of drama. And the garden to have a terraced, you look
Sure.
on one section, you look up at another. Terracing is wonderful. It's expensive to begin with, but it's worth it. And you only have to do it once. Have to mow your lawn every week. That was an added opportunity for garden making here.
Right. And you really couldn't have done the formal rooms and so forth, erected those hedges and walls and whatever on the original terrain. You had to create these landing pads for those types of gardens,
Yes, I think
Yeah.
so. A
Yeah.
sloping terrain is not really congenial with a formal plan.
Yeah. Yeah. And so you as if this is not enough, you also have another garden in California, right?
I'm afraid, yes. Glutton for punishment.
Is it addictive? Is that the problem?
Of course, the great thing is that I can grow all of the things that I can't grow here, at least many of them.
Yes.
Even the English can't grow the things that I can in California. One of the great learning curves for me, wanting to make an English garden here in Connecticut, I came back and at least half of the plants that I was in love with that I'd seen in England do not like Connecticut. So it's taken many years to discover what likes us and what doesn't. And what allows me also to grow plants chock-a-block closely together. Which the garden books often say you shouldn't do. It's probably true. The plant would be happier if you gave it a foot of space around each plant. But on the other hand, that doesn't make a beautiful garden. So we
Sure.
grow a lot of plants here, maybe not in an ideal way for the plant, but so that we paint pictures with the plants. And that takes some experimentation because not every wonderful plant will allow you to grow a chock-a-block close to its neighbors to create that kind of intense horticultural experience.
Right. Well, in the last couple of minutes, I just want to sort of invite people to kind of partake. So this is a really wonderful destination. Again, in northwestern Connecticut, in Litchfield County, I guess you are.
Litchfield County, yes.
Yeah, and you're open a couple of
We're open 3 days
days a
a
week.
week, afternoons, Wednesdays, and Fridays, and then most of the whole day Saturday. Also,
Right.
for private groups, if people would like to make an appointment, we do
Oh.
garden tours.
Oh, great. And there are frequently educational or sort of extra events that people can come in. I mean, it's art events and other educational sort of
We
events and so
do. We
forth. Yeah.
have a very large 18th century barn that has been rebuilt for human habitation. It's air conditioned and it's heated. And we have lectures, we have demonstration classes, mainly in the spring and the fall. The summertime, people seem to be busy. But we have a full schedule of lectures and even plant sales.
Right. Oh, I think I've binged a little bit at some of your plant sales. Oh my
Occasionally,
goodness.
because the summer, I like to see the garden when it's cool and
Yes.
pleasant to be in. Once every month during the summer months, we have an evening with wine so that people can come and enjoy the garden in the cool of the evening.
Yeah. Well, I will give all the information about visiting and especially about and upcoming programs, especially Garden Study Weekend, which is the weekend of September 6th. And you have sort of a day of talks, one of which you'll be giving about Hollister House. And
Lectures, and then we
yeah.
have a garden party, and we have garden tour.
And Sunday,
A
the
wonderful
day after,
gardens.
you have nearby gardens, tours of nearby gardens. So it's
We do.
a great destination event. And I'm so glad to talk to you. Thank you for making time today, George.
Well,
Just
thank you so much for having me on your show.
okay, and I hope I'll talk to you again soon.
Great.
And I hope I'll talk to all the rest of you soon again, too. Now, don't miss an episode. You can subscribe free to the podcast version of the show on Spotify or on Apple Podcasts. And you can find me anytime at awaytogarden.com and on Facebook and on Instagram as at awaytogarden. And happy gardening meantime.
Underwriting support for A Way to Garden provided by Color Blends Wholesale Flower Bulbs, a third-generation bulb company offering top-size flower bulbs directly to landscape professionals and ambitious residential gardeners on the web, colorblends.com. And by High Mowing Seeds, Wolcott, Vermont, professional quality vegetable, flower, and herbal seeds that are 100% organic and non-GMO project verified. On the web, highmowingseeds.com. And by White Flower Farm, offering a wide range of carefully selected and expertly grown garden plants. On the web, whiteflowerfarm.com.
A Way to Garden with Margaret Roach is a joint production of awaytogarden.com and the smallest NPR station in the nation, Robin Hood Radio.